You're listening to an FX PhD podcast from fxphd.com.
Hi, and welcome to this week's FX PhD OD, a bit of a jet lag. John McCormick with you. How's it going, my friend?
Good, good. How was the big I, B, and C?
It was actually really fantastic. It started out really great on Friday night with the FX Guide FX PhD meetup. We had probably close to 30 people actually show up to Koningshut. I think that's how you say it, which is Frank's bar. Sadly, Frank was not there, but we basically filled the bar and overspilled onto the streets. There honestly wasn't even enough room for all of us, but it was a good time. The beers were cold. The fries were crisp and hot. And we had a lot of good time chatting to people, you know, both from an FX Guide standpoint and as well as an FX PhD standpoint. It's really great. As always, the Euro crowd really shows up for these things. I think far and away of any area in the world, easily the best turnout all the time for these type of things. I guess they like the free beer in Europe.
I think Americans like free beer. I don't think free beer is a uniquely European thing. I think the English have been known to go to the odd pub.
Well, fair enough. Fair enough. That is true. There are quite a fair number of Englishmen at this event as well. So yes, no, it was good. And then went into Saturday, which I'll be honest, I spent most of the day working on the talk that I gave as part of the Flame Award at the Autodesk booth. They were giving out an award recognizing both the artistry as well as contribution to the community of a single artist. And so I was part of that ceremony on Saturday night starting at 6. And I had started my speech ahead of time, but I felt I needed to put the finishing touches of it, as it were, when I got to Amsterdam. And it was a really nice event. And congratulations to you, my friend.
Well, thank you.
For actually picking up a special recognition as part of the Flame Awards.
Thank you very much.
And I should actually mention that for those of you who didn't, if you go to autodesk.com/flame award, Vico Sherbani, actually Mike, a friend of ours, actually ended up winning the Flame Award. And in addition to that, there were several special recognition recipients. Basically, the advisory board, of which I was a member, really had a tough time picking one person. I mean, how do you pick one person, frankly? It kind of goes to my thing of top X lists. There's going to be someone left off on that list, and really an amazing number of great artists and people who've contributed to the community over the years. So we, in addition to recognizing Vico for the winner of the Flame Award, also recognized both John Hollis and Sean Broughton, who their pioneering work at Smoke and Mirrors back in the day. I mean, honestly, when I started on Flame, they were like the place who was doing amazing work related to TV commercials and Flame.
Oh, absolutely.
It was, they were seriously phenomenal. And actually, John was off of Flame for a little while and now back on. Mike, you did an article with him relatively recently in the history of FX Guide, right, about his return to Flame on a much stronger basis than he had been doing it over the last several years. And he's now very active, actually, in the 2014 release in the beta form. So really fun to see John Hollis, who is one of the very early members still actually using it.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah, and also there was a recognition of Peter Webb's work.
Yeah, Peter. Well, the other special recognition recipients, Nate Robinson, Sam Edwards, and Richard Lyons, in addition to yourself, were all nominated. But those of us on the advisory board thought it was deserving to have recognized the very first Flame artist, who laid the groundwork for many an artist after him, and Peter Webb, obviously a good friend of yours, friend of mine. And we were able to convince Autodesk to actually have that special recognition award, I guess you could say, for Peter Webb as well.
Yeah, I've got to say, I mean, look, I said this on Twitter at the time, but I'm going to say it publicly, even though it's a bit weird, but clearly I only got award because of you and Jeff, but in particular, you know, like it was a recognition of the stuff that FX Guide did, so... I mean, I felt a bit weird having my name on it because it should be our name, but you couldn't do that. But thank you.
Yeah, no, it was, and you know, Mike, just your interviews, your research that you do for them, and even it was quite amusing that Maurice Patel, who introduced you, kind of said, like, well, you know, when I hear this guy calling, I'm both excited and fearful at the same time. And
I've got to listen.
By he means fearful, but it may not quite the right, but you know, basically knowing that you keep the feet to the fire, the people that you're interviewing. And obviously if your knowledge in the industry are in a very good position to interview people, you know, in fairness, as opposed to many people in the press who haven't been in the industry or on the box or whatever, obviously. So anyway, it's well-deserved. I appreciate the sentiment of what you're saying, but also well-deserved on your part. But yeah, it was a fun event. It was great vibe. A lot of people, you know, a lot of people there, a lot of people I hadn't seen over the years. Sam Edwards even flew in from Los Angeles for it. So it was a lot of fun. It was a good vibe related to Flame and frankly, a lot of younger Flame artists were there as well, which was cool. It wasn't just us old folks.
Hey, so there was some interesting stuff launched at IBC. There was a new Arri camera and also new stuff in terms of lens tech. What else did you get a chance to sort of see much actually sort of new stuff or things that were unexpected?
Well, you asked about this and we were going to I was really busy and didn't get a post an article back because I was just frankly swamped when I was there. But SGO Mystica introduced what they're calling Mamba Effects, which is a $239 VFX compositor, which is
sorry, say that number again.
239 euro.
Wow.
So, what would that? You know, I think they're pitching it 299 in the States in dollars. I think maybe I'm not sure, but 239 euro. And you know, that was a huge announcement, obviously, and it was kind of interesting at the booth trying to get information about this for them. It took a couple trips to actually find someone who could speak about it and speak eloquently about it. But it's pretty interesting. It is, for all intents and purposes, contains most of the main VFX tools from Mystica in a shot-based, node-based procedural compositing environment. Unlike Mystica, which has a timeline, right? So each shot is, in essence, a stack.
And a ton of hardware.
And a ton of hardware. This is a one shot at a time, batch, kind of similar batch or nuke procedural flow graph for VFX. And in kind of gauging, I mean, they have obviously a ton of effects. You know, most of the effects that are there, like 3D compositing, denoise, tracker, keying, color correction, optical motion blur, you know, all these things are in there as part of it. But it's kind of hard. I don't know in depth, you know, the feature set, the full robust feature set of Mystica. So someone was telling me who actually serves as a reseller of this and has experience programming for other VFX products in the past. If you think about this tool set, consider it similar to kind of the most recent version of say Assimilate Scratch.
Okay.
As far as the type of tools, somewhat in that realm. I mean, there's no really good parallel, but it's certainly not like Nuke with a full 3D compositing environment where you can bring in 3D models and objects and things like that. That's not the case in Mamba. But for me, that at least gives me a little bit of a baseline to kind of consider what the effects tools are inside that application. At least as a starting point. And, you know, if you want to find out more about it, you know, you buy it now at $239, you get access to the beta immediately. But it was kind of funny because I was talking to the guy from Mystica about it, and I've said, okay, you know, that's great. Now, I understand there are some add-ons. We went over to the one of them, which is a very expensive add-on, which is a $10,000 euro add-on, which is the Stereo 3D option. And,
right.
You know, obviously they have, as you know, from everything, the amazing, really strong and robust Stereo 3D tools within the application. So it makes sense they're not going to give that away, right, for the price, considering that they're selling Mystica for. And I said, okay, that's one. He said, well, the other big one is DCP Creation. That's a $2,000 option. I'm like, okay, well, that's pricey. But frankly, if you're going to have to deliver something in DCP, you're probably going to make that money on that. Thinking about the scale of what you'd be doing. So those are two things I said, okay, well, that's great. And tell me there's no hanky-panky or anything going on, like limited CPUs or limited GPUs. Like, well, actually.
Really?
Yes, there is. Basically, as far as threads that you can use up to 16 threads as part of the 239 product. So if you have more than 16 threads on your CPU, you can't actually use them. You actually have to spend another €49 for what they call the parallel computing boost, which then allows you to have like up to 128 threads. So consider that you'd want to immediately add another €50 to that purchase price, okay?
But the whole thing's kind of built on using CUDA, isn't it?
And yeah, a lot of it is. Yeah. But I still think that would be quite useful overall in helping the application seem speedy and interactive and so forth. But you're right. A lot of it is very much in the graphics for it. But then in addition to that, you have things like another €50 for Red support, another 50 for Airy support, another 50 for Phantom support, another 50 for FiceCam report, things like
that.
Oh,
really? It's like Lego.
Yeah. So, you know, in some ways, Mike, that makes sense because, I mean, it's a little annoying, but at the same time, maybe people aren't going to deal with these formats in the situation that they're in, so they don't need them. So, you know, I guess at €50, it's not a big ask. If you want to get 2K render, that's an additional €19 because it's limited to HD renders. And if you want to get 4K render, that's €90.
How much was the 2K render?
2K was €19. I'm like, why even charge €19 for it? Yeah. I mean, it seems like just make the price $249. Or something like that. I don't know. Anyway, so it does add up in what you'd spend, but I think for a sensible baseline system, if you wanted to use it, you know, you'd still be under €300.
Well, so you're going to be publishing a story on this?
I was going to ask you about it. I mean, do you think it's too late? Should I add to it? I mean, it's not too late. Okay, all right.
I'm sitting here like wanting to find out. I'm sure everyone's listening is wanting to find out.
Okay, so yeah, that's what I figured. The problem was, is frankly, again, this Saturday and Sunday, I was in meetings all day, so I wasn't able to do it from the site. But yeah, I'll get that up tonight then with more details about it.
Yeah, no, I think definitely. I mean, here's the thing. I could have published a press release on it when it came out, but you've actually gone and spoken to them. And by definition, FX Guide and PhD much prefers to have the latter than the former. So, yeah, no, definitely.
Okay, yeah. I mean, we'd ask an email and like, okay, I think I'll be able to get to that or whatever. But yeah, it's time of the premium. So I think it's interesting. I mean, again, you know, they'll have also, in addition to the version that you can buy, get access to immediately, within 2 weeks, I'll have a demo copy that you can try out on your own as well. So there'll be something freely available that you can try and see actually what it does yourself.
Right.
And the good news is that it should be fairly stable from everything that they were saying. The UI is different with the procedural compositing flow graph, but under the hood, the tools haven't changed, anything like that. So it should be fairly stable from an operational standpoint. It's just more the interaction that the user has with it that's changed dramatically.
Hmm.
So you could see, you know, this could be, this is really attractive though, Mike, to someone who has Mystica.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you've already got Mystica, this would be...
This is a no-brainer. Sign me up for multiple copies of this.
Though, I guess the question is, how much do you think it's being targeted at Nuke, and how much is it targeted as a Mystica prep station?
My hunch is, in marketing literature, they kind of seem to be targeting Nuke. I mean, not officially, but I mean, they always aim high. But in reality, I think that they're targeting it to support. I mean, I think in reality, it's going to support the station and maybe some additional users. Again, let's see what the performance is like. Let's see how fast it is. Let's dive into maybe, you know, see what the grading tools, see what tools there are, the denoise, you know, who knows. But I don't know. I guess they're trying to set the compositing market on fire a bit too.
It was funny. I've been talking to a bunch of compositors, and if you are in a certain sector of the market, you know, you talk about various products like After Effects, Nuke, you know, whatever. And then there's a section of the market that you talk to where people literally say, well, the Nuke, because there's actually no competition at all. There's just no other option. And for that particular part of the market, the feature film, high-end sort of visual effects stuff, that the, and I'm not saying this, I'm just saying this is what people literally say spontaneously when talking to them, is like, well, there is just no other choice. Like, it's the only option that's valid right now. In their opinion, and these are people normally working at, you know, major effects houses, but it's interesting just how dominant at the high end Nuke is in terms of that feature film pipeline. Now, if you were talking in commercials, if you were talking in broadcast graphics, none of these would be reflected. But it's a while since I really feel like Nuke has a very, very strong hold in that high end, and to attack it would be a fairly hard thing to do front on, because you need to have sort of a kind of critical mass of operators and to have somebody convert their entire pipeline over. You might do it on price, given that the market is what it is, but I don't know.
Not on feature set in this case, right? This is, yeah. Again, you know, like you said, the market for Nuke now is wider and wider. You know, it's obviously, I think, entrenched, as you point out, in feature film. I don't see that changing, but this would be more towards the fringes of that and, you know, building towards, I hate to say lower end, but yeah, the more the corporate, the motion graphics, the more commercial places that might find this potentially interesting. But especially, like you said, the people who already have Mystica already.
And we should say that
a no-brainer.
Mystica, in conjunction with Park Road Post, won the IBC Innovation Award, didn't they? So congratulations to the guys on that as well at SGO.
Yes, in fairness, that was part of the reason I was having such a hard time finding anyone who could talk about, because apparently the paper process and the approval process for that award is nothing short of almost the technical Oscars application paperwork. So they were kind of busy on that on the first couple of days of IBC. But yes, they did. That is correct. They were involved in that award for sure.
Yeah, I mean, The Hobbit obviously did break incredible ground in terms of high frame rate 3D cinema, and Mystica was very much at the center of that at Park Road Post. And that post-production pipeline of the guys at Park Road is just incredible. I mean, they're really amazing. You know, people like Dave Hollingsworth and stuff just really feel like they're all just really good guys. They really know what they're doing over at Park Road. Good people.
Yeah, very much. Again, that's a success story for Mystica. I see less of it. Again, as you know, the Mystica can delayed the rollout in the States for a while to make sure that they had their ducks in a row, the act together, whatever, in Europe, as well as down New Zealand. And then more recently, it rolled it out in the States after those areas. But I think they kind of hit that rollout at a really tough point in the industry for the States. The timing wise, I think people are really making do with what they have, or have been for the last couple of years, making do with what they have, as opposed to making huge, gigantic investments in new hardware and software, in the United States.
I have to say, and this is going to seem a little cynical, but I think also their timing was off in the States, because most of the juice for why Mystica would just, you know, rock your universe was stereo, because of the optical flow tools, the matching tools are just very, very fast for stereo workflows. The trouble is that there's been such a shift between shooting stereo and actually doing stereo as a conversion, and the conversions are so good. So while there are films like Gatsby, which used Mystica and are shooting stereo, and there continue to be films that are shot in stereo, there's a lot more films that are being post-converted, and as a consequence, the Mystica requirements are less compelling, not irrelevant, just less compelling than they were when you're actually shooting stereo and trying to match and do alignments and fix-ups and stuff to naturally stereoscopically generated material. And so I just feel like if Mystica had landed in the States aggressively earlier, even though I know they couldn't do that because that didn't fit in with their rollout schedule, it might have been an easier ask to get in. Also because the budgets for those stereo films, it kind of makes sense. You sort of save so much money by having a Mystica, because the volume of work through it you're trying to get through, it's sort of easy to justify. I think, you know, that's the lever Mystic has had, and to a certain extent, John, I think that it's something that Red has had. Like Red Epic really just bloomed in feature films due to its small size and good workflow for stereo. And but of course, Red was right there when it should have been with a small camera for stereo in the US, whereas Mystica really wasn't.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, 2 years ago when they introduced it, that was, you know, right at the hot spot, and at that point, that would have really quickly tailed off. And you're right, that is a huge selling point. In Europe, it's being used in a lot of various commercial houses and things like that, but maybe a bit less stereo. But again, that's a really good point about the sweet spot of Mystica, because I think there's no doubt that that's one thing that does really, really well. And frankly, there's not competition for it in that realm.
Yeah, you know, we used to joke that there needs to be sort of a killer app, not application as a whole, but an in-cycle application of the technology to cause you to allow it to sell in. Like in the original days of Flame, I've got to say that was tracking. We take it for granted now, but back in the day, you know, you did a demo of doing tracking and it just sold the Flame in. Now, it wasn't that you did all of your jobs tracking. It wasn't that tracking was, you know, like in a visual effect that you said, oh, look, that's great tracking. But that ability to track was the one that got you in the door, and then it just exploded in what you could do as people understood more how it worked. And I feel like Mystica is the same. It's not the only thing you can do stereo, but stereo was the thing that, you know, got the door open, that made someone say, hey, we should write a check for this, even though it's expensive. And once it's in, of course, then you know it's a good tool and you use it. Yeah, I've got to say the other thing is in the general color grading market, one of the difficulties that a company is up against is you have really good products like the stuff from Lightworks or whatever, but you also have incredibly good, very cheap software from companies like Blackmagic, because the aggressive pricing Blackmagic's done on DaVinci has really made it kind of hard. Like, you know, you say, oh, this is better. Okay, is it like 100 times better? Because it's about 100 times more expensive.
Right. And I've got to say, they have been kicking it development-wise on Resolve. I had a conversation with someone. I was mentioning the Mamba effects, and they were like, "What is that? Something Blackmagic's doing?" And I'm like, "No." And they were like, "Phew," because you know what, we think they could really, you know, come up with something amazing if they wanted to. You know, they've just been the other manufacturer was just really impressed with the kind of quality and pace and strong development of Resolve with the kind of stuff they had. So I thought that was interesting to get that kind of kudo from another manufacturer, respect from another manufacturer for what they've accomplished in the last several years.
Yeah. Yeah, they have. I'd be interested to see if, like what the new cameras are like from Blackmagic. Cause I do think that there's been some, I mean, the Blackmagic cameras were really kind of interesting for their raw pipeline, but I don't think they hit their sweet spot from industrial design or from kind of fitting in with what was going on. You know, if you had the balance of things, they had the raw, but they didn't have a lot of the manual operational stuff that you want from that and a small sensor versus, say, Alexa, who went the other way. Ari said, hey, we're going to get you not necessarily raw because you on camera going to record, say, ProRes, but oh my God, we're going to give you a big sensor. We're going to give you, you know, exactly the ergonomics that you want, with the kind of, you know, familiarity that makes it easy for a DOP to pick stuff up. And so firstly with the Alexa and now with this new camera, I think Ari has just been pressing exactly the right buttons, incredibly intuitively actually, because you might have said there's no way someone's going to shoot stuff compressed and shoot it and record it ProRes. And yet feature films like Jobs and tons of episodic and commercials just have shot ProRes and that's it. They don't even have RAW files.
The amazing lack of RAW. I mean, hardly anyone shoots that at all in the commercials market.
Stunning, isn't it? You would not have predicted that.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's what's kind of genius about their new camera as well. So I would definitely not have guessed it. But I actually think, Mike, some of that is in reaction to some of the workflow issues just over the years with the RED stuff. I mean, if you know what you're doing with RED is... Obviously, you do, and we do at FXSite and FXPG. Works okay, but oh my God, there's so many cases of the blind leading the blind regarding R3D out there that people just go, okay, this works. I'm going with it.
Yeah, it's scary, isn't it? But I think it's true.
Yeah. So anyway, the Alexa camera seems, again, quite impressive, and I agree with you regarding the Blackmagic camera. It's like, did they talk to any DOPs?
I mean, it's not. It has all the hallmarks of a well-engineered engineering camera, not a well-engineered DOP camera.
Yep.
So, yeah. Anyway. Anyway.
But it's very smart business model from their standpoint overall. Very much a let's make our money from our hardware, sell complete packages with all this ancillary gear, and really grow the company. And that's obviously something that's certainly happened with Blackmagic.
Well, and I think also Blackmagic does do well-engineered hardware. So, you know, no one says, oh, the Blackmagic camera's unreliable, it overheats, it has problems with, you know, it is, they feel like a rock or a toaster or something solid, but by the same token, it is something solid.
Yeah, and they've kicked up that game because there was a time when their computer cards were viewed as inferior and more prone to breakage and burning up than, say, AHA cards or AHA devices. And I think actually that Graham and Blackmagic has done a nice job of actually stepping up the quality on much of their gear over the years. I mean, I'm talking years and years ago. I'm not talking recently, but that was a knock against
them. That's true, wasn't it? Yeah, back in the day.
Yeah, so he has done. I mean, that is actually one thing that he addressed. A very smart man. And, you know, take a look at Blackmagic. And is Bluefish the other guys who are originally from Digital Voodoo?
I think so.
Yeah, compare those two companies. I think so. I respect what Graham has done in building that company, because I was a big fan of the very first Digital Voodoo card. So I know him back in the day. I had that, I think, in my Mac 2 CI, I think is what it was back in the day, laying off frame by frame from After Effects to Disc Recorder. Good old days.
Yeah, good old days. I remember we shouldn't do that. But, you know, it's easy to do it, isn't it? You just gotta, I remember back in the day, A64, Abacus.
So, so glad we don't have to deal with that anymore, frankly.
Yeah.
So anyway, FXPHD, we're winding up the term here. I just, by the way, if you're listening to this, I heard that we'd done the April term surveys a while ago, and I heard talking to several people at IBC said they'd never gotten an email about that. So I actually just sent that out again this week when I got back from IBC. So those of you who have a chance to, if you're a member of the April term in FXPHD, I know that was a while ago. We'd love to have your feedback on those courses, but it just seemed like something happened with the mailing, so I sent that out again. But as we wrap up the term, hitting the ground, getting ready for next term.
Yes, absolutely. And people like us to leak, so I think we should.
You leaked like a sieve, but only privately.
I know.
I mean, is that possible? A private leak? Is that a leak? Is a private leak a leak?
Well, I love our members, and I want them to be happy. I want to make them happy.
So for those who are not in the forums, do you want to share that publicly this week?
I think we should. Okay. We should. So this is indicative of what was the theme for this term, which was definitely responding to things that people were asking for. And to keep in tune with that, one of the things that people really responded to was our writing, directing, and animating a short film course, which has just been terrific. And just I raved about how much I liked the episode on Blinks, for example. But the intent of that was to not go into the whole production of it. The intent was to show, you know, how you'd animate and do stuff. But everyone's had such a good time. It's such a good course that everyone was like, you've got to keep it going next term. Now, normally we would have a break, but we've decided to do exactly that. So there's, in fact, going to be a second half to that animation course, and we're really excited about it. It's going to Lucas is going to keep going. We're going to finish the film, and it's going to be great fun to see what you need to do to polish stuff off and finish it up. And I've got to say, John, it's exactly the sort of thing that I know a lot of PhD members want to do, you know, create a short film like that, both creatively, but also, you know, learning from Lucas Martel, who's just such a great guy, so funny, and he's so, you know, natural. And that sort of directing bent to the whole thing, I think, has been really specific. So even though we've tried to be as application agnostic as possible, obviously some stuff is a bit specific, but finishing, we're going to try and keep going in the same way. We will have to do some stuff that's application specific. I mean, obviously, if you're rendering, you're going to render it a renderer. But we'll be closing that out. So more details of it, obviously, next term. But if you enjoyed ANI 102, you're going to love part two, which is coming next term.
Yeah, very much so. And really looking forward to having Lucas back, because he is just a great teacher. And so, I mean, makes the classes enjoyable to watch and you learn a great deal. So it's interesting. You know, you can have an incredibly talented artist and incredibly talented animator, but they can't teach their way out of a paper bag. And, Lucas is certainly can, you know, I mean, that's not everyone who's a great artist can teach, but Lucas certainly fits the ball on both those things.
Yeah, no, completely. He's just a great guy. He's just, you know, really interesting and animated and talented. And when he's winning his Oscar and being super successful, I will, you know, be able to, yeah, I remember back in the day when Lucas was hanging. And people, before you say Mike's carrying on, we, you know, point to many of our professors who have gone on to do awesome things. Professors who have gone on to direct, oh, I don't know, Godzilla. And other amazing exactly. things. So, yes, I'm not joking when I say that. Some people say, oh, when he gets, you know, famous. I have no doubt whatsoever that Lucas is going to be, continue to be an amazing force to be reckoned with.
Very, very true. Very true. Well, hey, my friend, on that note, I've got to dodge out.
Get out of Dodge?
I've got to get... Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. I got to get out of here, as I say, a bit early. Again, great to catch up with you. Missed talking to you last week.
Yes. I just want to say thanks to the guys down at ICIP, the conference I just was down at, which was great. I got back from yesterday, but we'll talk about that another time.
Yes, fantastic. And as always, everyone, thanks for being a part of FXPhD, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye.
See ya.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FX PhD.